ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्याज्ञनञ्जनशलाकया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रम् अत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरूपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठावतीम् राधाकुन्दं गिरिवरं महो राधिकमदावसं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीत्तग्रीवाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालयति निराजितापदपङ्कजन्ता आजिमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्त्वां हरिणं संश्रयामि। अनारभितचरीं चिरात्करुणयापतीर्णाकलुहं समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियम्। हरिपुरतः सुन्दरादीतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये कन्दरेष्पुरतोपासचिनन्दनः अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदातु सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलाय तक्षं विश्वम्भरो द्वियावरो जुगधर्मपालु वन्दे जगत्प्रियकुरो करुणावतारु। लादिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तु ते। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कान्तराधा कान्त नमस्तु ते। राधे वृन्दवनादिशे करुणमृतवाहिनी कृपया निजपादब्जा दस्यन्मह्यं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनायापराधलक्षये क्षिप्तश्चाकमादितरङ्गमाद्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानम्। वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम्। वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम्। श्री सचिनंदन गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय। गौड़ वैष्णव गुरु परंपरा की जय। समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमान हरि हरि। Okay. So welcome. Good morning to all of you. We are in our second day, third day, depending first day is counted or not. First day, every day, first day. Okay. Day one again. Those who will be watching online will be a little bit of trouble following with that. What do you mean by that? But we are continuing our ever-evolving exploration of reality. Yesterday, of course, we felt the inspiration to start more officially by gathering blessings and put dust at the feet of the great personalities whose disappearance day was celebrated yesterday. Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Krishna Das Kavidas Goswami, Saint Francis Appearance Day, and so on and so forth. For sure, many other saints we may never know also appear and disappear. Premilas Prabhu's birthday as well. Why not? Yeah, of course. So, yeah, we share a little bit about their life, their teachings, hopefully in a way that felt relevant and relatable. We try to connect some of the themes of evolution and divine love with the life and teachings of these personalities, great saints, since we have planned to make this retreat this time in the UK revolve around my recently published book, Evolution and Divine Love. Last year, we entered the laboratory with radical personalism and explored together. In that time was the seven pillars, so to say, which were the last seven chapters of the book. This time, there are no pillars in one way. The pillars have already been established. So, oceans, whatever, you name it, waves, drops. So, for this year, I don't have much of a systematic approach. It will be a little bit more chaotic. It's part of life, chaos. So, we'll try to embrace chaos and we'll find some order there. So, I'm just thinking about some themes, and you have suggested some others. So, we'll see how it unfolds during the days. There is no plan from this day, next day, next day. But of course, there is some idea for today, what to share about. And somehow, topics related to what we have been talking yesterday, even yesterday evening in our Q&A, that came. So today I like to share about the principle of tradition, what it means to belong to a tradition, and what it means to, as I mentioned in my book, and we will refer to it in a moment, preserve tradition by breaking new ground. Which again, it may seem like an oxymoron. Preserving tradition, breaking new ground, like either or, no, both and. So, and of course, yesterday also, I remember we had talked about how the Bhagavad Gita itself, Bhagavatam itself, Chaitanya Charitamrita itself describe themselves as ever fresh, ever evolving. So the scriptures around which our tradition and any tradition revolves are described as ever new, ever fresh. So if the main revelation that makes the tradition manifest around that revelation is ever fresh, the tradition, the school, the religion, whatever you like to call the lineage, sampradaya, it has to be ever fresh as well. It has to be ever new. So how to navigate these ideas of tradition and the dynamism in traditional thinking, yeah? Which are the things to preserve, which are the things to that sometimes become outdated, maybe. Today I was listening to a podcast of a friend of mine, and he was saying how love always outgrows its containers. I like how he put it. The nature of love, again, ever evolving. We are talking about something ever evolving. It's always outgrowing its containers, its vessels. So for some time in our journey, we craft a certain vessel to try to love and experience love. But at one point, if we did our homework properly, that love is starts to overflow and requires a new container. No? And a new container, like when you plant, you have like, I don't know, there was a lemon tree here somewhere, right? But small, still giving lemons, right? But I imagine the beginning was, no? So it has this small container, but at one point it's like, okay, the roots are getting big, the tree is getting big, we have to find a bigger one. Okay, it's bigger, getting big, bigger one, big. And at one point, no container, just put it on the on planet Earth, which is in itself a container. And it keeps growing. It's not like, okay, when we put it on the soil properly, no more expansion. No, it doesn't stop, never stop. So of course, in our tradition, we have principles like that when we speak about parampara, when we speak about disciplic succession, when we speak about handing down the knowledge or the revelation. The handing down should not be a passive exercise, should not be a, what to speak, a handing down of unresolved issues in the name of revelation. I remember we talked about that in radical personalism. We can pass unresolved trauma in the name of parampara. No? So, and we are creating a new parampara at that time. No? The external form is Gaudiya Vaishnava parampara. We have holy robes and all the paraphernalia is there on the outside. But if on the inside there is something that we have not properly integrated in our journey, We are passing the that dismembered part of us to the other person, so to say. Though externally the vessel looks like divine revelation. No, that can happen. So it's interesting to think about all the things. So parampara is, of course, the literal translation of parampara is one after another. One parampara, one the other, like one guru, disciple, disciple, guru, disciple. But of course, there is a dynamism to that. It's not just one after another. No, like a factory, like, okay, next one, next one, next one, next one. And you are past the script. Like you are supposed to say that, okay, next one, this is script, this is script, this is script. No? Sometimes, of course, I've heard about the saying, like, okay, scriptures are like law books. And Prabhupada himself has talked about that, right? And I have no problem with that, but the point is that law books also change. The idea of law books is like it's fixed in a stone, I would say written in stone. Doesn't change, it's the law books. But law changes according to time, place, and circumstance. Law is not like a, I mean, there may be universal principles that may still be there since the inception of the constitution of any country, but so many things change in the context of that. So many things grow, are outgrown, need to adjust, need to find a new vessel. Because again, the nature of love is to outgrow its containers. Try to stay with that one for a moment. I'm not inviting you to lecture Divina right now, but just for a moment. Love is outgrowing its container, so it requires a new vessel at every moment to properly contain, to properly honor this principle. Like we were saying yesterday, you know, Rupa Goswami praying for, give me 1,000 tongues to honor the name. Give me 1,000 millions of ears. Give me a new vessel. I have vessel. I have a tongue. I have 2 ears. But love is outgrowing that vessel. My 2 ears have collapsed. I need 3,000. Probably if Krishna says, okay, here you have 3,000 years. After a few moments, I need an update, a vessel update. It's no longer enough. Love is outgrowing that. Love keeps outgrowing everything, right? Outpacing everything in its constant unfolding. So that's beautiful. So parampara basically means that. Parampara, again, is not one after another in terms of a copy-paste system. No. Nowadays we are in the age of AI and all these tools can do that quite better than any of us. So what makes parampara different from a AI copy-paste tool? Again, there has to be an aliveness to the system, right? So remember we talked about in radical personalism that another way of speaking about parampara is a living. And this I'm referring to some wording that Father Richard Rohr will refer to, his living school of prophets. And prophet doesn't mean Shakti Abhisavatar descended from somewhere. Prophet, the word means someone who speaks for the truth, who is a spokesperson for the truth. So it's a living school. There has to be aliveness to that of prophets, of people who are committed. And not only to speak the truth as a profession, like I learn the script, I speak the script, but truth is dynamic. Again, truth is not set in stone. It's not this one thing. Once you learn it, you know the truth. No, truth is dynamic. Siddhar Maharaj will say Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Satyam means true, Shivam means auspicious, or Sundaram means beautiful. Truth is true, cannot not true. For truth to be true, it has to be auspicious. No? It has to be in a certain way that invokes the auspiciousness of the other, because I can't just, I will tell you the truth and I'm like destroying you, basically. No? It has to be auspicious. And Sundaram has to be beautiful. It has to culminate in the experience of beauty. No? If not, we have not yet reached truth. No? If truth, for us, truth is horrible, dark, depressing, hopeless. That's not true. We are not denying tragedy in the world, But that's not the final sentence in the book of life, so to say. That's not the final word, right? So despite all the suffering, and we'll be talking more about that in the coming days, suffering, tragedy, and terrible things happening, all that's happening in the bigger vessel of love, in the bigger embrace of beauty, truth, and so on. So we are not denying them, but seeing them in context. So love, everything exists in the context of love. Let's put it that way. Love is the ultimate container of everything. No matter how big certain things seem in our life, love is bigger than, again, everything else. Love is outgrowing, outpacing everything else, and continues to hold everything together somehow, if we have the eyes to see. So parampara or tradition has to reflect that. Parampara shouldn't be like a parade of museum pieces. Right? Exploring our cyclic succession shouldn't be like a visit to the museum. Like, everyone is frozen. Yeah. Here is this person. Here is Rupa Goswami. Here is Sanat. We may experience them as such if we do not take the time, like we did hopefully yesterday. We tried to go, okay, Raghunath Das Goswami. Is he a museum piece, or is he a relevant, alive, vibrant, ever-evolving figure that can still speak to us today, October 5th, 2025? So how to work with each piece of the chain, the cyclic chain, in a way that they are not frozen pieces? I mean, they are not frozen pieces. We may be the frozen ones, and we see frozenness everywhere. That's the problem. It's not that, oh no, such acharya or such tradition, it doesn't speak to me, it's irrelevant, it's totally frozen. We are talking about genuine truth, genuine aliveness, that's vibrant all the way through. So how can we keep, again, our experience of the tradition, ancient truths, revealed truths that have no beginning? You cannot get more ancient than that. No beginning, anadi. Things that it exists for eternity, very ancient. And we are that, just by the way. We have no beginning. We are quite ancient. But traditional doesn't mean, again, subscribing to eternal truths in a way that they cannot keep growing. So there are eternal truths, yeah. God is love, we are eternal. But all those things are ever evolving at the same time. So we embrace tradition, but we embrace it in a way that allows for dynamism, dynamic tradition. We have nothing against being traditional, or even about being orthodox. Orthodox means embracing the original teachings of the tradition. But also we can embrace them in a nuanced way. Sometimes that's the word for heterodox. The opposite of orthodox is not heterodox. The opposite of orthodox is heretic. No? So heterodox means someone who subscribes to orthodoxy, but also not in a rigid copy-paste way, but with dynamism in between, with nuance in between. So that's the idea, no? Guru Parampara in our tradition is, it's not just a formality. No, it's not like, okay, I accept the guru. I receive a name. I have my card. I'm a card-carrying member. I can show my card whenever I'm asked, "Who's your guru?" I lost that card myself. So, but guru disciple tradition is something that actually a very deep commitment. And ultimately, commitment is always trans-institutional, right? There is institution, of course. I have nothing institution, but the essence of any tradition is trans-institutional. Again, the institution is a vessel, a container, and the essence of the tradition always outgrows the container. That's why when you become mystic, in the real sense of the term, you cannot, you have outgrown the institutional container. how many times those people are just seen as weird, strange, eccentric, heretic. Let's kill them just in case. No, that's what happens with many of these great saints in most traditions, right? They kind of become a threat to those who became addicted to the vessel, so to say, and who have mistaken the vessel, the container, for the content, right? And they have like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati will say, they are, it's like the honeybee licking the glass bottle instead of entering the bottle inside, where there is the actual honey, no, the actual nectar. So they're licking the bottle on the outside, thinking, oh, this, I'm relishing the content. No, you are just licking the container. It's not, I can tell you, a glass bottle and honeys are not the same thing. Right? So parampara means that, no, it's a deep trans-institutional commitment, both from guru and disciple, both from teacher and student, for each of them to make a contribution to the ongoing flow of love. Basically, that's what it means, at least to me, to become a member, no, of a school. There's an ongoing revelation of divine love happening. Okay, how do I connect to that? How do I bear witness to that? And what's my contribution to the ongoing revelation of love? There is a contribution that Karuneshwari only can do. I cannot do that for her. There is a contribution that Tapan Nandini can do. Only herself. We cannot become her. And each one of you the same way. So it's a very beautiful question to ask. Okay, what's my contribution? No, and here, sorry, but we don't accept false humility at this point. No, who am I to do a contribution? I'm so fallen. We are too old for that stuff, right? Okay. So there is a contribution. And again, it's not our own merit, it's not my own separate thing. We are interrelated stuff. So whatever we can offer is also inseparable from what we are receiving from our mentors and guardian angels. But at the same time, it has to pass through us, and we have to allow that to happen and get out of the way so that flows through us, right? So that's a big part of our contribution to the parampara. It's not enough to parrot all teachers. I mean, there are two types of parrot, as I like to say. In our tradition, there is the poetic understanding. I don't know if this has been scientifically proved, so I'm not claiming that here. But even in the poetic mythology of India, they will say, when a parrot bites a fruit, it makes the fruit sweeter. No? Jamuna will know about this. She's the parrot acharya here. How many parrots at home? Two? Two. You may have seen some of them during the lectures.
Yes. Wow.
No? At that moment, everyone loses sight of whatever I'm saying in the class. I said, oh. I saw them in person when we went to your house, and it's like, they came there.
Is it true that the fruits become sweeter? No.
You try it. You try it.
They just eat sweet fruit.
But you try. You gave them a fruit to put the beak, and then you try if it was sweeter or not. You did the experiment?
If it's sweet, they'll eat it. If it's not, they just want the sugar, that's all.
Okay. So anyhow, don't let love. That's another point
But
anyway.
that's the energy.
So we can be a parrot. Generally, when you say you are parroting, means you are just like copy pasting, repeating, becoming another museum piece in the fridge, frozen. That's not parampara, let me tell you, please. Let's not make a ridicule of this idea. So you can be a parrot in that way, copy pasting, or you can be a parrot in the way of biting the fruit and making it sweeter. So that's a choice. That's free will. Which type of parrot do you want to be? Another way of saying, what's free will? Choosing between this parrot or that parrot. Mimicking, copy pasting others' reality, comparing, imitating, or individuation, becoming myself and adding my own contribution to the ongoing revelation of love. You pick. No. Red pill, blue pill in Matrix terms, right? Red parrot, blue parrot. And interestingly enough, the main speaker of our main book, we were talking about books and revelation. For us, our main revelation will be the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the main speaker is called Parrot, right? Sukadev, the playful parrot. It's not coincidence, so he's a parrot. But again, and I've heard sometimes about this with some ideas that okay, he was a parrot of Radharani. That's another conversation. There are different opinions about that, but I prefer to concentrate on how he's a parrot in the sense of biting the fruit of the Bhagavatam and making it sweeter. Because remember, Sukadeva Goswami heard the Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva, his father. No? And he repeated, quote unquote, the Bhagavatam in a new way, with a new flavor. To the point that, well, his own father and guru, Srila Vyasadeva, was sitting on the first row listening. Not only his guru was listening to his disciple, but the guru of his guru was listening to the disciple of his disciple. Narad Muni was there next to Vyasadeva. Narad Muni is Vyasadeva's guru, right? No? Narad Muni is the one who's telling Vyasadeva when Vyasadeva is dissatisfied with how, again, that's an interesting idea in itself. Vyasadeva has compiled Veda, Vedanta, Mahabharata, all this like gigantic corpus of revelation, and he's dissatisfied. Why? Because love is outgrowing its containers. Yeah. You can always say something more. It's not that what he revealed so far is like, oh, that's crap. It's just like he felt it's not, I say. No, it's just she felt. The nature of love is ever evolving, ever growing. So even if I have done this, I've compiled this glorious body of literature, subjectively I feel dissatisfied. Wow. That's interesting. That speaks highly about Vyasadeva in one way. No? Sometimes we tend to see that part as like, oh, Vyasadeva fell short or whatever happened. No, that speaks about the nature of reality, how it continually unfolds, and the nature of someone attuned to that, like Vyasadeva, and how they're trying to keep pace with that, and feeling okay. So, and again, someone might say, but you have written all this. Yeah, but it feels almost like nothing. Let's con What's next? I feel something else can be said, needs to be said. Again, like Mahaprabhu was saying, in me, there is not even the aroma of love. Sri Chaitanya Dev, golden volcano of divine love, he said, there's no love in me. Whatever love he has is, in one sense, put aside for the next experience of love. Right? So again, Vyasadeva felt like that. And Narad Muni nourished his disciple, inviting him to take one step further and, okay, enter into samadhi, enter into divine trance, and Bhagavatam will be revealed. And then you find full satisfaction. But again, the interesting thing is Bhagavatam becomes manifest through Vyasadeva. He already had written a previous edition of the Bhagavatam, but now the one we know is like the upgraded edition, revised edition of the Bhagavatam. And then he felt satisfaction. Yes, Jayatma superseded him. But then he talked that to his son, Sukadeva Goswami. He became his disciple. And then when Sukadeva Goswami was about to talk to Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj, it's not that Vyasadeva said, oh, my son will be talking about my book, so I have nothing to do there. I mean, I've wrote the book, right? He will be parroting. He's called Sukha. He will parrot him. I won't go there. I mean, I'm the author of the book. I know what the book is about. He's my son and my student. No, nothing like that happened. Because there was the first one, so to say, buying first row ticket to be seated there and listening to a new level of Bhagavatam. a new, he knew. Okay, I published, quote unquote, the Bhagavatam, but Bhagavatam is a living organism. It's not just one thing, one book. This thing, as we were quoting Prabhupada yesterday about Joan of
Joanna.
Arc, right?
Yeah.
He said, that's Bhagavatam. So it's a very organic living thing. It's not just this. So then Sukadeva Goswami speaking about the parrot who received the fruit from his father. He tasted the fruit and now it's sweeter. So the news spread, oh, now there will be an upgraded, sweeter version of the Bhagavatam spoken by Sukadeva. Yes, there's there taking notes, receiving everything. And his guru Narad Muni is next to Vyasadeva, the two of them wrapped in ecstasy, listening to this upgraded version of the Bhagavatam. So that's parampara. That's preserving the tradition by breaking new ground, by entering into a newer level, a newer layer. And let me say, as I said a few moments ago, you are all members of that as well. It's not just an Vyasadeva Sukadeva Goswami affair. We all have our contribution to make in whatever way. Again, doesn't mean you have to write your own commentary to the Bhagavatam or whatever, but each one has their contribution to make to the ongoing revelation of love. That's a tradition, basically. That's a tradition is a, how to say, it's a very committed attempt by desperate people to properly honor the ongoing revelation of love. Love keeps expanding, keeps manifesting, keeps unfolding, and the proper members of a parampara are all like desperately trying to do justice to that and see what's my contribution in all this. That should create belonging again, because due to all the things, I hope you feel like, okay, and that gives me a sense of belonging to this school or this tradition or to the ongoing revelation of love. Again, belongingness is not just you receive a card, you receive a branding, you receive a stamp. Now I'm part of it. So that's the nature of revelation. I'd like to share with you a quote from Srila Prabhupada that is very interesting. It's from a lecture he gave in Los Angeles in 1970. June 14, in case you don't believe me, he said this. If one previous teachers have written something, one will not touch those points, but write something which can develop further. If one at all writes, no, so you don't have to write, relax if that's not your thing. But if one at all writes, that person will write something which will beautify or glorify or magnify the former idea. So, yeah, it's all based on some ancient revelation, previous contribution. Now, whatever we can contribute is somehow sustained on previous contributions, but there's a new contribution to be made. And again, here Srila Prabhupada is talking about writing, but he says if one at all writes, like Impa, you may not be a writer, but whatever you are, then make your contribution in that area. And someone else may have done a contribution before you, then you can build upon that and make your own contribution. But this is Prabhupada, and I'm quoting him because sometimes in the name of Prabhupada, many people say, no, you cannot go beyond Prabhupada's books and only read those. What to speak of writing books yourself? Ooh, no. How you dare to write the commentary of the Bhagavad Gita? Prabhupada wrote the final commentary of that. And he himself is saying, giving him permission. The famous story when someone asked him, Prabhupada, what will be the next book you will publish? And he just published the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, probably the Bhagavad Gita. Right? And the devotees were like, Prabhupada, well, maybe they felt, maybe he forgot. Yeah. You just publish the commentary in the Bible. And Prabhupada, look at them like you think I'm stupid. I remember I wrote, and he chuckled basically, saying, so many commentaries can be written to the Bhagavad Gita. Because I've written one, that doesn't mean that there's nothing else to be said, it's the final word. So that was his, he didn't do it, but he made the point that like we could just be writing a comment on the Gita, and after that we can publish the next comment on the Bhagavad. It's an ongoing thing. That's the nature of revelation. I'd like to share one section from here in this connection. If you want, you can follow us. It's in the section where we have pages with Roman numbers in the introduction. I hope you have learned Roman numbers. Page 36. If not, it's page XXXBI. And you will find the subsection called Preserving Tradition by Breaking New Ground. Know what we mentioned before. No, that's how hopefully I made my case so far, that we want to preserve tradition, but the only way to preserve something is by breaking new ground. In other words, the only way, to give another example, the only way for you to maintain a relationship between husband and wife is by developing the relationship. You cannot just preserve something, keeping it always on the same place. That's the beginning of the end. Right? So the same way, tradition is relationship. It's always there's always a relationship going on. It's always relational. So in a tradition, we are relating with our teacher, with ourself, with the revelation. So how to preserve tradition by making it grow. And by that I mean breaking new ground, by creating new space for more spaciousness, more expansion. So I'd like to read a few paragraphs. Let's see. I'll begin with the second one. It says, the very nature of existence compels us to evolve continually. The earliest form of something, this is based on some words from Brian McLaren, just to do justice to the author. The earliest form of something is rarely its purest or most ideal version. In fact, no form is ever static or reaches finality. Every form of is dynamic, constantly adapting and perfecting within the greater unfolding current of divine love. Ray McLaren Kijai, dear friends. This is true even for the spirituality of today, which within each true religion lies a unique manifestation of this love, which demands a fresh interpretive framework. One that reflects the ongoing unfolding of existence and love. Consequently, we can affirm that all true spiritual traditions are in a state of constant evolution. That's an important point, right? This may, in one sense, it's a reframing of what we shared so far, but to think about spiritual traditions as in evolution. Again, it's not like my tradition, because this is related to the word perfection, right? Many times we'll say, okay, our tradition, our revelation is perfect. And perfect means it cannot become more. Because if it becomes better or more, it means it was not perfect to begin with. And that's why we need to or stop using the word perfect or recalibrate that. Because perfect, if perfection prevents unfolding and development and growth, how perfect that is. If you say, okay, my relationship with my daughter is perfect. And someone, oh, perfect, perfect, perfect? Yeah, perfect. So therefore it cannot grow more, it won't unfold, there will be nothing new to experience. Exactly. It's perfect. Anyone will be, that's not perfect. I don't want that. If that's perfect, then imperfection ki jai. So yeah, perfection has to be redefined to allow a constant further perfection. We are lost in the pages, Radha Priya.
You thought to
It's
have
36. It's introduction.
two sections.
Yeah, 36, page 36, Roman numbers. So traditions are in a state of evolution. That doesn't mean that Krishna began to be God, will stop being God at some point in the context of the evolution. And there are certain eternal truths that are always there. But that doesn't prevent those same truths from growing and expanding and unfolding. One more paragraph, page 37, the next one, right? But these frameworks expand. They don't replace what came before, but build upon it, with each element subsuming and enriching the previous one, creating a process of sedimentation. Each layer of experience deepens and enriches the previous one, adding both complexity and nuance. So it's not like, okay, I'm advancing to the next level, everything else is rejected. Everything else is integrated, included, plus the next one. Sedimentation means that, like new layers, layers, new layers, but upon layers, building upon other previous layers. So this is not mere accumulation, also. That's an important point. When we speak about growing and evolving, it's not just more in terms of numbers only, because we tend to think quantitatively many times and not only qualitatively. This is not mere accumulation, quantitative growth, but the emergence of something qualitatively new, an ever freshness that transcends previous limitations. What emerges is not just an increase in quantity, but a leap in quality, where each new experience becomes both an extension and a transformation of the past. This way, reality is not just ever increasing, but also ever diversifying. So this, I think, is important. I remember we had a conversation with a devotee last year in Belgium about that, and that triggered this part. It's funny how you reread your book and you remember each paragraph came from speaking with this person, or I mean, I don't remember everything, but some things come. So this important thing, it's not like when we speak about growth, development, it's just the same, but in bigger quantity. But quality is also evolving. Something new is emerging out of what already is there. It's not just more of the same. Getting bigger in terms of numbers, and getting bigger in terms of experience, quality. So again, being part of a tradition means that. Being part of a tradition is not just, for example, the evolution of a tradition is not just in terms of adjusting the tradition in a language that speaks to 2025 postmodern society. Yes, that's part of it, but also increasing realizations in the heart of the members of the tradition. Because sometimes we think, okay, to keep the tradition, or let's like, say may mention the word in the book, keep the current current. You get the play of words? The tradition is like a current, a descending current, but are we keeping it current or not? It's out of date. So, okay, yeah, we have to keep the current current. Use language that speaks to the modern mind, which is relatable. All our acharyas have done that. If I speak in old classic English, you will fall asleep. And some of you are still falling asleep when I'm talking right now. That's another conversation. Don't get distracted looking. Who is that one? It's not you if you're hearing me. But the main thing is not only, okay, how to adjust the same thing and present it in the new package. It's not just evolving the packaging, evolving the container. You follow my point? It's not just, okay, there's the content and the container. And the duty of parampara of any tradition is to adjust the container so the content is delivered in proper container. Yes, but the content also evolves and changes. So both things are evolving, not just a container. No, because sometimes I've seen, at least in our tradition, become a little obsessed with remaining, and it's very important obsession, how to speak to the modern world about what we are doing without sounding like religious fanatics or people who is out of touch with the world and living in their own bubble and just embracing dogma without taking in consideration what's the other disciplines, other traditions, other disciplines, secular disciplines like psychology or science, and things that for most people is like the authority of the day. So how much we can engage in conversation with all these, all that is important. And in one sense, it's intertwined, because to do that, you have to have your own realizations internally. You have to grow into your own quality to be able to sit with a with an agnostic scientist or an atheist psychologist and have an enriching conversation without feeling tempted to take the book and start to hit them on the head with a with your revelation and become just dogmatic and judge them in your mind as inferior, all the stuff that can happen. So how to be civilized and learn from that. So all that requires realization, and it's tied to adjusting the container, the language, adjusting properly so it resonates with people, but you need to work on yourself for to do that properly. But again, at the same time, it's not limited even to that. You have to develop your own insights and realization in your own internal loving relationship with God and with others, not only in terms of interacting with other disciplines in the world. So there's a lot to develop to keep the current current. Yeah, and keeping a broad appreciation, something that, again, I mentioned yesterday briefly, but for me very important, is not only, as I said, not only quantity, not only making our movement bigger in size and members and donors and sponsors and supporters and whatever, but making it deeper, making it broader, making it more accommodating, more nuanced, and allowing ourselves to be informed and educated by other disciplines, by other wisdom traditions, and starting to dissolve those walls that are unnecessary between traditions and between people and disciplines. Like I quoted yesterday, and I'll quote it again if some of you were not here, although all of you were here, but I'll quote it again, which was this conversation of Prabhupada with one person about Joan of Arc. Oh, very beautiful. Los Angeles, 1969. Are you familiar with Joan of Arc? She was a saint. Prabhupada says, yes. Yes, I'm familiar. Yes, she was a saint. Is there any person, asked this lady, in the Srimad Bhagavatam similar to her? And it's interesting, no? Because now Prabhupada, as you will say, he doesn't try to, okay, who we can find in the Mahabharata, so what, which is our version of her. But instead he will say, she is that person. Now, we don't need to go to our scriptures to find Joan of Arc. No? Because Joan of Arc is not outside of our scriptures. Yeah. And he will present her as the Bhagavatam.
So fearless.
So you, yeah,
Yeah.
so you cannot get more all-embracing and encompassing than that. So Prabhupada say, you want to see Joan of Arc in Srimad Bhagavatam? He's kind of like surprised, right? Like, no, we already have Joan of Arc. Why we need to create a replica of her in our own tradition? There is her. It's unto herself. Why don't you take Joan of Arc of Srimad Bhagavatam? No, he's trying to say like she is that. Any activities of devotees, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's again very broad understanding. What's Srimad Bhagavatam? It's basically the love story between God and his lovers. May take different forms, we may call it different ways, no? But that's Srimad Bhagavatam. Like recently I was I recently became friends with Daniel Ladinsky, famous translator of Hafiz. And he in one of his books he's mentioning the word Sufi, which many times he will say, people think, oh, these are the mystics from Islam. But he will say that actually, at least for the lineage he belongs to in Sufism, they will say that Sufi was a denomination to address any genuine lover of God, despite their affiliation. And eventually it was like related to Islam, but actually it was something universal. Not like, I don't know, you use the word Catholic. What the meaning of the word Catholic? Universal. And so what's when we follow Sanatana Dharma, what do you mean Sanatana Dharma? The eternal function religion of the soul. So there is that universality, no? So Prabhupada finishes saying, whatever is pertains to Bhagavan, to Bhagavat is Bhagavat. So Bhagavat can be expanded to any unlimited thing. So anything in relationship with God, that is Bhagavatam. There's a lot there. Because everything is in relationship with God and hell. So if Joan of Arc, she was in relationship with God, she's also Bhagavatam. You should expand Bhagavatam in that way. Yes. That's how he concludes saying, actually. Yes. Right. But after that, he says, yes. So you were so aligned that you yourself knew what he was going to say. Try to imagine Prabhupada saying that, you know, saying all that beautiful expanded notion of what's the Bhagavatam in such a generous universal way, and then saying that's Bhagavatam. You should expand Bhagavatam in that way, and then he's ending with the blessing to each one of you. Yes, Om. So that's how we should expand the Bhagavatam. You know, expand the Bhagavatam again doesn't mean you have to write books, but how you should expand your experience and understanding of what's about. And if you're reading the life of Saint Francis of Assisi, or if I'm reading whatever this or that, feel okay, that's in relation with God, that's about love of God, that's Bhagavatam. There are different editions of the Bhagavatam, different versions. Again, sometimes we end up very trapped into these boxes, right? This is Bhagavatam, it begins here, then there, like we were talking yesterday, right? There are some verses, maybe our interpolation. This section may not be the Bhagavata. Now we have a big Bhagavata. Now the question is, what's not the Bhagavata? All right. Right.
It's the end of it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you can get. And that's why we will say Bhagavata was concluded, no? Srimad Bhagavatam, and then Srimad Bhagavatam ends in the last verse, Namah Sankirtanam, just as we say the other, offering pranam to this Namah Sankirtan. And Bhagavan in connection to Namah Sankirtan, that is Sri Chaitanya Dev. And then from Srimad Bhagavatam, then in Gaur Lila, we have Chaitanya Bhagavatam from Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is Vyasa Dev in Gaur Lila. So it's another version of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's just Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam. And then Sanatana Goswami comes and writes, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And so on and so forth. Again, Rupa Goswami writes, Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And I won't tire you without more titles, but there are so many. So like the spirit is, it's all one thing. It's all the books of the Goswamis are elaborations on the Bhagavatam. So the idea is it's all one book. It's not a book. It's all one current of love. And you can find that not only among, again, our tradition, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Bhagavatam, Brihad Bhagavatam, but also Joan of Arc. I'm here and this and that. Any genuine lover of the divine, that's Bhagavatam. You should expand Bhagavatam in that way. Yes. Yes, definitely.
The currents, could it be that the currents do go off the side, or some people argue watered down?
Yeah, and of course that's something that Krishna himself acknowledges in the Bhagavad Gita, right? In chapter 4, he's talking about avatar, and he starts to talk about parampara. And he says, Jogo Nashta Parampara. He's saying, Vam Parampara Praptami Mam Rajarsayo Vidu Sakaleneha Mahata Jogo Nashta Parampara. So he's saying, in time, the parampara becomes disrupted. So I descend to reestablish it. Now, you can read that literally, and there's a place for that because we have avatar principle, Krishna descending in his Bhagavan form to the world. Also, we could say whenever there is some disruption or deviation, if whatever word we may like to use. Krishna descends also in the form of inspired souls who represent the actual spirit of revelation to bring. Of course, the current is unbroken. It may seem to be interrupted in this world, but the current of love and revelation is it's ongoing and ever evolving. Nothing can stop that. No. It may seem to have stopped in how it was flowing in a particular line or religion or institution or group, but it's not like love has stopped. It cannot. So, and that's why there are so many interconnected topics, but that's why we have this notion of siksha parampara also. Like Srila Siddhartha will say, sometimes some very notorious teacher will bring a very fresh current of revelation, and maybe in time that was not represented in that same way with other members of that line, and eventually 3 generations after, someone comes which catched up, so to say, from where that other notorious teacher left off, and we will trace the connection back between them. It's not that we are completely discarding everyone else, but we are just following the current revelation. Again, the river is not flowing like this. No? Ahiri bhagati premna swabhava kuti labha, but love moves in a crooked way, like a snake, like a river. So sometimes that can happen, and happens, and it's happening. It always is happening. It's not that it's happening or it's not happening. Simultaneously, you have groups or traditions or members of a tradition when sometimes you can feel, okay, this is really fanatic, this is really dangerous, this is really narrow-minded, this is really not too open. And simultaneously, some other people in the same group or in the same tradition are being very dynamic and deep and mystic and alive. So both things are coexisting at the same time. It's not like it's one thing or the other. And each one according to their sincerity, realization, whatever they are on the journey, they will find one thing or the other relatable. Because again, we can see that in people finding religious fundamentalism very relatable because it speaks to their insecurities, to their fear, to their need for belonging, but actually they don't realize it's belonging and they're just fitting in and subscribing, checking the boxes. And probably many of us went through that stage of our life for some time, and it's okay. Or we are going through that, we'll be going, I don't know. Hopefully you have gone through that. For other people, again, they have outgrown that vessel, and something else is required. That's something else is required for it to make sense. The previous vessel no longer makes sense. And it doesn't mean that the previous vessel was bad or wrong in some cases. It's just that it no longer makes sense. As I say always, it no longer makes sense for my mom to change my diapers. First of all, because I don't use diapers, just it wouldn't make sense if I go to her and say, "Mom, it was so beautiful that time we shared together when I was a baby." She'll say, "Indeed, beautiful." And because it was beautiful, it's over. And we are ready for something more deep, more dynamic. Just to give an example, right? But no. Comparing the baby diapers, we are in our baby steps in bhakti, and we need the diaper changing, so to say. But at one point, you are ready for something else. You can be more independent. You have to be given more freedom, and you have to be trusted, and you have to trust. So that has to be built. As we were talking last night, right? With the baby example. In an ideal, healthy family, the first years the baby is just showered with love and embrace. And I mean, hopefully always, but in the beginning, there are no boundaries, there are no rules. It's just like spoiling the child, right? First years, like embrace and contact and touch and security and safety and love and affection, building the foundation. You are loved unconditionally, you are accepted, you belong. But at one point, you have to introduce boundaries, right? So that person has some orientation. But the boundaries are coming after all that love. So the boundaries will be ideally received as a form of love, not as an attack. As we were talking yesterday with Ravindra's question on chastisement. And you can speak of chastisement as boundaries. Guru Krishna will put boundaries as an expression of love. So if you are have gone through that properly, unconditional love, unfiltered, unlimited, then boundaries. That combination makes for a very functional human being, right? So, and all this, I like to conclude a few more minutes, if you allow me. We have a few more minutes on the topic of, I don't know if we will have the time. I'd like to make an exercise also. But for me, this whole journey, I really like how Father Richard also depicts that with these three words in his book, The Wisdom Pattern, which is order, disorder, reorder. And one of the themes also that has been shared that wants to be discussed was the topic of deconstruction, which is connected to all this. Because sometimes what adds beauty, what adds dynamism is removing those things that have become rigid, lifeless, or we have outgrown them. So you have to let go of them. It's a way of speaking about deconstruction. Now, that can feel like bewildering, that can feel confusing, frightening, because it's a releasing of certainty. No, you are releasing a form that was familiar for you for decades, a way of being, a way of thinking, a way of feeling that is suffocating you. It's no longer enough, but it's familiar. And it provided you a sense of identity and a sense of purpose, and but at the same time, it's killing you. So it gave you life, and now it's killing you, right? It nourished you, and now it's suffocating you. Can you relate to that? Right. So you are in that, like, in that crossroads. Like, okay, this has given me life. I'm grateful for that. Has been beautiful. I develop a sense of identity based on that, but now I feel that I'm outgrowing that, and I need to release that. And it starts to feel suffocating. So, but if I release that, what then? Something else will be there to receive me, or I'm just jumping on the cliff, and there's like, That's why it's so important to have people in our life who we really see they're going through that. Order, disorder, reorder, deconstruction, construction, deconstruction, reconstruction, whatever you would like to call it, life, death, resurrection, you name it, right? Dawn, midday, dusk, I don't know, so many ways to speak about the same sequence. And we need people that we see, oh, they are doing that, and they are coming back renewed and re-inspired. So I get the courage, I would say, muster. Master. That's a good word, huh?
Master.
I master the courage to release the what's known, uncertain, and familiar, to explore the unknown and the mystery with all the trembling, including there. Now, that's why Krishna says, surrender unto me, don't fear. Because he knows you are fear. He knows you are terrified. I know. He knows. He said that with empathy, not like bullying us. I know, my dear, this is terrifying and scary, but it's suffocating you. So you need to release that. Surrender a little bit more and a little bit more. And I'm here. And then he say, Aham tuam sarva papa vimoksha isyami. If you do so, I'm there for you and I will protect you for everything. So there's no reason to fear. You are fearing, I know, Krishna said, but trust me, there's no reason to fear. I have all the bases covered up for you. But you have to do the quantum leap. I cannot do it for you. I'll jump with you, or I send you my guardian angels to jump with you, and I'll be down like receiving you, all of you. That's as much as I can do. If I will do more, I will be taking away your free will, and that I don't like that Krishna said, because if you no longer have free will, our relationship is no longer voluntary. I'm just imposing myself upon you. That's not loving, right? So it's an important question we need to ask. What does it mean, deconstruction, for us in our journey today? That's an important question. What do we need to deconstruct? Well, recently in Austria, we were talking about anarthanivritti. And anarthanivritti can very easily be translated in a contemporary way, nivritti, as deconstruction. And anartha means false values. So deconstructing false beliefs, deconstructing false values. Or maybe I will add to that a footnote, not even false, but sometimes deconstructing true values, but in a way, in deconstructing the, how to say, certain values in a way that no longer works for us. To rediscover the same value in an updated form. So it's not that it's a false value, it's just a version that I have outgrown. So again, it's not that that was bad, illusory, false. I'm rejecting that. Now, we don't need to conceive of progress as just rejecting false stuff. But many times progress is releasing outdated versions of real stuff. Right? And embracing the necessary updated version. It's more positive.
Like reconstruction, like that reconstruction instead of destruction, reconstruction.
Deconstruction is okay, not destruction. But there can be construction, deconstruction, and reconstruction. And as Father Richard mentioned in his book on order, disorder, reorder, of course, the challenge is not only releasing the order, no, the familiar, and dealing with the disorder, where things seem like chaotic and out of place and bewildering and what's going on. But then, even if you accept entering into a disorder chapter when you will be meeting your dismembered psychic self, so to say, yes, we are already doing that. All this is also warming up for our grief exploration. That will be disorder, just in case, right? Don't come that day waiting for order. That's a necessary disorder, a holy disruption, a holy chaos. We'll close the door of the house for that day. So no, the day before, we'll be officially kidnapped on that day. But then Richard will say, not only surviving the disorder, but then trusting the new order. Because we may not have an idea how the new order, the reconstruction will look like, but trusting that there is something called that. Right? Trusting that not only my previous order was the only possible option, but after disorder, chaos, whatever, there is a new order, a new way of accommodating things with more spaciousness, with giving more place to things that we have not given place to them in our lives. And that's why we need sometimes to go through this order to realize those things that we are not given a place to in our lives, and that can feel like crisis, and then hosting them with more spaciousness. And we find that pattern always, right? The other day we were talking about even the Rasa Lila of Krishna and the gopis. Krishna calls, I mean, one level is order, okay? Another day in Vrindavan, everyone is doing their thing. Order, no? The daily village setting. Now comes disorder. Krishna plays the flute. Disruption, right? Gopis were whatever they were doing at home, disrupted. Running after the flute call. Right? Disorder. And then they find Krishna. Oh, reorder, no? A new order with Krishna. But then Krishna tells them, "What are you doing here? It's too late for single ladies to be with a single married ladies to be with a single boy in the four." Disorder again. No? Like he's disrupting. They are like, "We did all this to meet you, and you are sending us back home." And then the gopis start to argue with Krishna, and they defeat Krishna. So then Rasa Lila starts. Reorder. A new order that accommodates all the previous layers, again, sedimentation, all the previous layers accommodate Rasa Lila. They start to dance and sing and celebrate life. But still, Christian feels it's interesting because they start to sing and dance, and at one point, some gopi think, "Oh, I'm the most special for Krishna." So that's order. That becomes statu quo. Not like you became complacent. No,
No.
that's not tasty. Krishna disappeared from Rasa later, right? It became boring again. You are taking things for granted, certain toxic certainty. I'm his favorite. That's not what this is about. Let's make it more exciting. Whew, Krishna disappears. Disorder. Again, total disruption. Imagine you're dancing and singing with Krishna. You're having the greatest time of your life, and the guy disappears. That's like, why? What are you doing? Why? I mean, he had very good reasons to disappear. If we study that, but we may not understand that. When we are disrupted in life, it's like, why did this happen? We don't really see why this is happening, but this is happening for a very good reason. And again, as we know, the gopis are thrown into a pool of separation in agony, like mad woman running in the forest looking for him, seeing the footprints, finding Radha. Okay, but Radha was left by Krishna. So again, so many layers of order, disorder. Then start to sing together. Krishna reappears. And then resume the Rasa Lila and new reorder, more broad, more deep, more accommodating, integrating many things that were not able to be integrated in the previous versions of the Rasa Lila. So this, even in terms of Rasa Lila, we are not talking here about an ordinary Nibriti as a condition. So this is going on among fully enlightened beings, still order, disorder, reorder, order, disorder, reorder. Construction, deconstruction, reconstruction. So, but again, going back to our case, that's necessary. Deconstruction is like pruning, like pruning of a tree so it can grow stronger. It's not uprooting the tree and killing the whole thing, but it's empowering the whole thing by releasing, cutting what is preventing their strongest form of growth, so to say. And as I say, deconstructing not necessarily means rejecting things that were wrong or false, just things that have been outgrown and are not longer, have become obsolete by way of being outdated, right? Like the other day, I was seeing this picture of. Which is ridiculous for us now, but at that time it was, I think, in the 60s. And he said, "This is the first hard drive made by Macintosh." And it was like half of this room. And it was like, and it hosted like 6 megabytes. And it's like, what? We have outgrown that now. That's my point, right? Like, at that time it was like, wow, this is incredible. We can do so many. Now it will feel like, suffocating again. That's if I come to your house with such a thing, I'm bringing you. It's like, no, it's like me going back to my mom with diapers in hand, right? Like, let's go back there. No, we are ready for more. No, so at that time it was great, it was a very incredible innovation. But now things have developed to a point, which it's very more subtle, very more efficient. Speaking, using the analogy, it has its own problems, of course. That's another conversation. AI technology and all that stuff. But I think it's important. And deconstruction has to happen in a healthy way, of course. Deconstruction has to happen in a way that we develop more intimacy, in a way that we develop more honesty, more compassion. We have to pay attention to the fruits of the deconstruction process, because also in deconstruction, you can become more cynic. Right, you can become more isolated, and you doubt about everything, and become like a fatalist, and you end up deconstructing everything, and there is no reconstruction. It's just like reconstructing, deconstructing, deconstructing, become nihilistic, basically, right? Yeah. So we have to pay attention how I'm navigating my deconstruction journey, because we all have to go through it. Always there is some form of deconstruction, some form of release. But again, it has to be in a way that there's openness, there's trust, there's intimacy, connectedness, growing. So we have to pay attention to the fruits of the tree, which are the ones coming. Is deconstruction making me more authentic? Is deconstruction making me more tender? Or is making me more bitter, more closed, more even resentful? Because all that can happen in the name of deconstruction. So we have to, it can happen even without us wanting that to happen, but we are not vigilant enough. We end up, as we were saying this day, throwing out the baby out with the bathwater. So it's like, oh, too much deconstruction. You threw the whole thing out of the window. Nothing remains. So we want to properly discern, right? So parampara, or tradition, as I was following that example, means allowing the baby, to keep growing, even if the bath water must be changed, right? So you may need to change the bath water, but there is a living entity called baby that needs to grow and expand, right? So,
Change
but you have to do something with the water, sorry?
and change the bathtub.
And change the bathtub and the lamp, electricity, and painting the wall and changing the diapers eventually. But don't throw out the baby, poor baby. No, if we conceive the baby as our project, ourselves, or our faith, our love for the divine. So I have an exercise, but you are raising some of your hands. Maybe we can go to a few short Q&A, and then we may conclude with some practical embodied exercise to try to internalize that. So I think Radha Priya raised her hand, also Jogamaya, also Bhakti Rasa.
Speaking about the risks of deconstruction that we experienced, and I wanted to mention the risk of now I think I'm inside the honeypot and I can criticize those who I think are just licking. I've seen that so many times when people deconstruct and find a new place, like your shelter, and they quit behind.
Yeah, at the end of the day, thank you for sharing. And of course, because again, the journey is so unpredictable, right? We are now here today, but who knows where the journey will take us? And I don't want to sound like, again, fatalistic, but I have many friends in my life that I've been living with together, even in an ashram, for decades. And now they have chosen not to be that connected with Gaudiya Vaishnavism. No. Not that they have rejected the whole thing entirely, but they feel the need to explore other bottles and other forms of honey. Maybe they are not licking the glass, they are licking honey, but not the same honey in the same bottle I'm trying to enter. And yeah, it's very important to honor that, to respect that, and to never be conclusive in our minds, what to speak of judgmental about. They have left, they are here, I'm there, I'm inside the bottle, I'm the honey licking bumblebee, you are the glass licking mosquitoes and things. Because yeah, superiority complex can pride is very resourceful. In other words, you can become proud about anything. Even if you are the greatest mess on earth, you become proud about that. Nobody can do it as messy as I do it. So pride is very resourceful. You can become proud of about anything and everything, which basically means you shouldn't become proud about anything. There's actually no real reason to be proud and to be concentrated on ourselves and on our journey. That's for me the implications of this very first instruction that Raghunath Das Goswami gave to Mahaprabhu, as we quoted yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. Do not hear gossip, do not speak gossip. And again, gossip just not, doesn't mean like, oh, do you know which they did? But even in our, just in our minds, projecting judgment onto other people's life and situation that we never know the whole story about them. I don't even know the whole story about me. So what's figure out the whole story about others? That's way far beyond my reach. But in our minds, many times we again put people into boxes, label them, and this and that. And many times it all has to do with our own insecurity and our own. Because if I need to feel superior to you, that means I don't feel I'm enough where I am. So I need to push you down somehow so I feel better myself. No? The words of Srila Siddharth, weak faith requires an enemy. Right? So weak faith is always pushing someone down so I feel better about myself. So if the only way I can feel good about me is by pushing everyone down, that doesn't speak so well about me. So yeah, we need all to grow to the point of being so good about me that whenever I'm dealing with someone else, it's always from a place of hopefully compassion and understanding. And even if someone is really licking the glass, thinking it's the honey, I can deal with all that with deep compassion and deep understanding. And if they need to go through that experience, I have to allow that. I cannot just prevent all people from doing what they are doing or what they need to do. So, sorry. At the end of the day, everyone is a beloved of Krishna. That's a really challenging idea. As beautiful as that is for us to say, oh, Krishna loves me, but that's not the end of the sentence. It's that Krishna loves everyone else as well, and you should treat them accordingly. And it's like, oops, better erase the whole sentence. For some people, that's how it would work for them. It's so challenging to relate to others as loved of God, and they prefer to erase that and the fact that they themselves are loved of God. And it all becomes just a punishment reward system. Just deserving, earning, respect, honor. Because dealing with the notion that everyone is already loved by God is like, it's broken down to pieces, all this dualistic, calculative thing. So. But we need to get there more and more. To treat each other as we will treat someone who is fully loved by Krishna. That's no small thing. We have so much theology and philosophy and fancy stuff we can talk about, but at the end of the day, if we are not treating each other as beloved of Krishna, then we still have to insist on that lesson. Yeah, thank you.
May I add one thought to this? Sorry.
Of course.
And also not forgetting that those people who we have now surpassed helped us get to this stage, right? Where so there's also gratefulness towards those who we think are now down there and we are up here. But without them, we wouldn't be here. It's very important, I think.
That's very important. Yeah, acknowledge the contributions of everyone in our journey. And that invites for a very mature sense of gratitude, because if not, our sense of gratitude will be only for those who are perfect and nice and ding 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 ding. And what about those who challenge us or makes us suffer and broke our hearts or traumatize us? Still, they left their footprint, their impression in our life. And I'm not saying that with, I would say, being insensitive to some trauma that probably most of us have gone through with someone, but there is always a gift, even, as I like to make a play of words in my something I'm writing for the next book, there is always a womb in the wound. So even if we are talking about a wound, there's a potential womb that can give birth to something. So there's gratitude for that. Jugamaya Bhakti Rasa, who goes first?
It was just nothing important.
Then you go first.
It's just about the baby and bathwater analogy and how it's actually comes from, I guess, Victorian or times when they would have the bath, the tin bath, and it would be the man of the house that would take the clean water, and then it would go down and then end with the baby. And because by the time it got to the baby, the bath water was filthy dirty. And it So if there was a baby in there, nobody could see it.
Thank you for your graphic explanation.
It's a wonderful thing. The baby for me is us. And the dirty water is all the things that have happened to us through life, and made the water so murky and dirty that we couldn't see it, we can't see anything. And Krishna's like, is the mother, if you like, takes the baby out of the water and throws the water away. So it's
But
like
that water served a purpose
yeah.
in so many ways, right? It's not like it was useless always, no? So it just no longer works for what's required now, right? So again, the gratitude for for all that.
Wish you left for the lovely clean baby.
Yes.
Hopefully. Right. If the water is so dirty, how is the
Anyhow, it was an analogy. Yes. We were trying to make a point. But thank you. Thank you for the historical background of the analogy. I didn't know that. First time I heard that was like, what are you talking about? What's that? Coming from South America, throwing out the baby with the Bible. What's that? So, thank you. But Teresa, last question, because I don't want to go. I will transgress a few more minutes to do an exercise altogether, but
was actually a comment or
please.
something to share. When we were talking about order, disorder, reorder, it came about Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva, or Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma. And the aspect of trust, and to be able to trust that order will come again from disorder, because that is the realm of Vishnu. So we can bring in the aspect of love and how love is in the disorder, there's the order, love, in the reorder, there is the love. And it's all just that is the thread that goes throughout all is the realm of Vishnu.
Thank you.
Able to trust
Yeah, and that goes in
that
line
order.
again with the example I gave about Krishna and the gopis and Rasa Lila, in the sense that whatever happens between Krishna and the gopis is all in terms of love. There's nothing but that, but there is order, disorder, and reorder, all in the context of the thread of love. So, yeah, thank you. Ready for an exercise? Okay, so I will explain the exercise. Also, for those who will watch this later and would like to do the exercise by themselves or find some partners around the neighborhood, wherever you are. So it will take like 10 minutes or so. And then we'll share back again for 2 minutes just to conclude and announce whatever other activities. So in the context of what we have shared so far, deconstruction and all that we have been talking about, preserving tradition, breaking new ground. The prompt is the following. So it will be in groups of three, but first will be something on yourself to write. So if you don't have anything to write, we can provide. Raise your hand. Someone needs something to write. Rasangi. Someone can provide for Rasangi. Type paper, pen. It won't take a lot of.
We've got many of them.
Pen is coming.
Thank you.
Next one.
Oh,
yeah. So there comes the prompt. So there's something that you have to ask to yourself. Two questions. One will be, what belief, and you can write it, of course, what belief, image of God, or certainty has been falling away in your journey? Yeah. What belief, image, what image of God or idea of God, what certainty has been falling away in your journey recently, of course, right? To make it relatable. That's the first part of the prompt. What belief, image of God, or certainty has been falling away from your journey? And then, in connection to that, what has this loss cost me? First part, what has this loss cost me? And what new space or possibility has it opened? So, what has this loss cost me? And what new space or possibility or the open door, however you like to call it, has been open. So it's clear? So that's the first part, which is to be done by each one of you by yourself in written word. What belief, image, or God or certainty has been falling away in your journey? And then what has this loss cost me? And what new space or possibility has it opened? So we'll spend like 3 minutes doing that. But before you start, after that, we'll make groups of three. And each one will share for 3 minutes. One will be sharing basically your reflection with the other two. And the other two will bear witness. Listening without judgment, in silence, no advice, no correction, mouth shut, presence, no? And taking turns. In three, we will take like 2-3 minutes each. I will use the gong, I will be marking, so we take turns. Yeah, that's clear. Okay, that's it. So you can start now, and then I will select the groups, and then of course I let me put the pause to the recording here. I hope the experience was interesting, and I don't know if someone would like briefly to add a single sentence about how it was the experience for some of you. Something, some interesting insight that came, something that you discovered about what deconstruction can mean by saying but witnessing others. Brief. Brief. Sorry? That was brief and beautiful. Thank you.
Seeing the connection of ours, we're all different, but they were all similar.
Similar. And that's the big purpose of this exercise, to realize how close we are actually.
Just the humanity that's within the world.
Feeling the relief that other people are going through something similar, especially when they're people that you and respect their devotion. I mean, you see that they've gone through something similar, and it helps you feel reassured.
Yes.
Being fortunate too that we're here doing this.
Yes.
And it is really nice to hear another's experience. That it's the act of hearing is
powerful.
Beautiful, powerful.
Yeah. So yeah, I hope by this experience you realize this deconstruction, it doesn't mean that you are losing faith, right? Like there is a problem going on actually, but it's often a sign that, again, that love is asking to grow beyond all containers. It's just God's insistence. It's not your failure. It's just God's necessity to continue expanding and inviting us to allow that to happen, basically, right? So it may hurt, it may be difficult, but it's in itself, it's a sacred moment, a sacred experience that is a making room for a deeper yes, right? So let's conclude with one short quote, famous one, and I think it's a beautiful one, going back for a moment about us as members of our tradition, participants of Parampara, and our contribution to it in terms of order, disorder, reorder, construction, deconstruction, reconstruction. In page 39, Roman numbers, XXXIX. in the same section we were reading, it's a famous quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's beautiful speech, The Bhagavat, which I think every Gaudiya Vaishnava should read, ideally on day one when they arrive to the tradition. So whatever nonsense they may hear, hopefully not after that, they know this is how it goes. Page 39, Roman numbers, preserving new ground. It's an introduction. I will read, no problem. If you don't need to read yourself. You can just meditate on the words. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, student is to read the facts with a view to create and not with the object of fruitless retention. Thought is progressive. The author's thought must progress in the reader in the shape of correction or development. He's the best critic who can show the further development of an old thought. Progress certainly is the law of nature, and there must be correction and developments with the passing of time. Progress means going further or rising higher. We must now allow ourselves to be led by those who lived and thought before us. We must not, sorry, it says now. I received, yeah, this and all, we have corrected that. But it's, we must not, okay, I have the old version with me, the hard bound, sorry. You are up to date. We must not allow ourselves to be led, no, one single letter can make a big change. We must not allow ourselves to be led by those who lived and thought before us. We must think for ourselves and try to get further truths which are still undiscovered. That's a whole manifesto. Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai.
It's my
mantra. Yeah, basically. So this section that you just read, that will be the Lectio Divina for today. Right? So from 6 to 5, you can spend some time with these beautiful words. 5 to 6, sorry. Spend some time with these words. You all remember what you all remember what Lectio Divina is? Right? Reading, contemplating, trying to stay with it. Develop that in our own side. When we reach our limit, pray for further insight, listen attentively and see how we can embody that. So we'll put resting to the sharing now. Sorry for going beyond a few minutes. We can have lunch a little bit later. No problem. 15 minutes later. 15 minutes later. Yeah, it's okay. And tomorrow morning, we will continue exploring other topics. I'm thinking about exploring, related to all this, the notion of paradox and what to do with that beautiful works in our lives. And today in the evening, we will be having our first official circle sharing. So also we'll welcome you for that later today. Hopefully we are warming up properly to feel safe enough and continue to share from all different angles. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sadhu Sangha ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Po.